bagel breakfasts, at least before Pesach. People want to sponsor after Pesach, but it's certainly an option. I may make a criteria of it, placing the order. In any case, we're starting on Rav Hai Gaon. We will still have a shiur, God willing, next Sunday morning. We just won't have the bagels.
As soon as shul gets cleaned.
But Rav Hai Gaon, as I said, after davening, may be considered the greatest Gaon by some, certainly in terms of his impact on halacha and the way he gets quoted. We see that. But we'll go through that. Take a look at source number one. Source number one is from the first Ravid. Remember, we've talked about the fact that there are three Ravids, Rabbi Abraham ibn Daud. So this is the first one who writes Sefer HaKabbalah, a historical work which, you know, whether the history is agreed to by everybody or somewhat controversial in certain aspects, definitely reflects a view among the Rishonim. Look what he has to say in source number one. V'Rav Hai Gaon hirbitz Torah b'Yisrael yoser mikol ha-Gaonim. He spread Torah more than any other Gaon. Ula'oro, of course, he's standing on the shoulders of giants and all of that. We understand that. He didn't, you know, spring up out of nowhere, and his father, Rav Shrira, set him up, literally, as the Gaon. Nonetheless, that's the credit he gets. Ula'oro halchu dorshei ha-Torah mi-Mizrach Shemesh ad Mivo'o. All those who were Doresh Torah, which I take to mean seekers of Torah, that's the way I translate it, but you could theoretically, you know, say a Doresh is a Darshan, a person who teaches Torah. By his light, all those who seek or teach Torah have traveled to me, Mizrach Shemesh ad Mivo'o, east to west. V'hayu yumei chayav samach tes shana. He says he lived 69 years. V'nifter be'erev yom tov acharon shal Pesach shnas dalet alafim tavshin tzadiches shanai, dies the eve of the last day of Pesach. 4798. V'chamohu lo haya lefanov b'chol ha-gaonim. There was never one like him before him. V'hu haya sof ha-gaonim. The rabbi calls him the end of the gaonim. As we're going to see eventually, he's not the last one to call himself a gaon, but he may be considered the end of the gaonim. Uibes David Haya Mizera Hamalucha. He is from the Davidic line. Mibnei Zerubbabel ben Shealtiel. Zerubbabel, who, for those who are in the Ezra many Shiurim, you know, is the political leader of the Jews, either right when they come back for the second Beis HaMikdash or after Sheish Batzar, depending on a discussion about their relative roles. And Vanesiim Vrashe Galio Shayu Achrav. He is heir to that line of the Nisim and exilarchs who follow Zerubbabel. V'ra'isi chosmo chosum al ha-gilyonim shaya sholeach. And I saw his signature on documents. V'arye chakuk olav k'mo shahaya al dego machane Yehuda v'al digle malche Yehuda. He says he had a stamp of a lion on it, like on the flag of Yehuda and the flags of the kings of Judea. How do you like that? Very regal. There are a couple of very useful things that are available online for those who really want to know more about Rav Hai Gaon. One is available on Hebrew Books, an article called Rav Hai Gaon in Sefer Hashanah of 1939 by Rabbi Shmuel Mirsky. He wrote about Gaonim in general, and he provides some of the information that I'm going to be quoting. There's also a collection on the Otzer HaChochmah online database. That one you have to pay for. But they have a collection of articles in a publication called Rav Hai Gaon, appropriately enough. And there's more stuff on Otzer HaChochmah. There's a lot about him. So he's born in the year 939 in Pumpadisa. Those who are doing the Daf Yomi, yesterday Rav Sheshes mocked Rav Amram from Pumpadisa, but this is a good thing still to be from there. Pumpadisa, I've commented before, is Fallujah in modern Iraq. He is the only son of Rav Shrira Gaon. There was also a daughter who married a French Talmud Chacham, Rav Eliyahu Azakein, but he's the only son. The Me'iri describes him as Miruba Begaonut, Miruba, Memresh Vav Beis Ayin, and you'll see it in source number two, as being a quadruple Gaon, in the sense that he is the fourth in a line of Gaonim. If you take a look at source number two, in Me'iri's introduction to Pirkei Avos, He says, V'chiber Sfarim, he compiled some books. This is talking about Rav Haigon. Ma'at Mehem, among them, V'chiber Sfarim Ma'at. I don't think it's V'chiber Sfarim Ma'at. The way I translated it here was V'chiber Sfarim Ma'at, but I'm not sure if that's correct. I think it's V'chiber Sfarim. Ma'at Mehem, Sefer Hadinin, V'sefer Hashvuos, V'sefer Mekach Umemkar. I think I did translate it correctly the first time. He compiled a few svarim, Sefer Hadinin, which is on financial law, Sefer Shavuos, on taking an oath, V'Sefer Mekach U'Memkar, and on commerce, Ela Shahar Shehirba B'Tshuvos She'elos Me'od. But he had many, many, many responsa. V'Rova Nimtza Mimenu Michiburav Mitshuvosav Heim Dvarim Haro'uyim Lismo Chaleim. And he says, most of it is what we would rely on, La Halacha. And here you get this fourfold position of Gaon, Rav Hai Gaon, son of Rav Shrira Gaon, who's the son of Rav Hananya Gaon, who's the son of Rav Yehuda Gaon. And remember, we've said the Gaonut is often not inherited. So this was unusual that somebody would be part of a line like this. Penultimately, he replaces his father as the Av Beis Din in 986. And then we talked about when we learned about Rav Shrira Gaon, that he became the Gaon during Rav Shrira Gaon's imprisonment. They were imprisoned, and Rav Shrira Gaon became weak, and he made his son, Rav Hai, into the Gaon. He marries the daughter of Rav Shmuel Bar Chofni. Rav Shmuel Bar Chofni is the Gaon of the yeshiva in Sura. So he marries Rav Shmuel Bar Chofni's daughter, which really means I should be discussing Rav Shmuel Bar Chofni before I get to Rav Hai Gaon, but I felt like we just did Rav Shrira Gaon, and Rav Hai Gaon in many ways continues his Gaonut, so that's why I went to Rav Hai Gaon first. We'll come back to Rav Shmuel Bar Chofni, God willing, although that'll definitely be after Pesach.
You say there are three Ravids?
Yeah, there are three Ravids. The one that we're most famous, that we're most familiar with, is the second, I believe, of the three. I believe he's number two. This is number one. Yeah. I think the one with the commentary on the Rambam is number two in line. Yeah.
Is this a reliable source for a point in time of the Davidic lineage?
So, Davidic lineage was something that many leaders claimed over time. Rav Shrira Gaon, I think, made the point in his Igeres of the. Not necessarily the Gaonim, but of the Nesiim and then the Reish Galusa claiming to be descended from David HaMelech. Yeah. We have no way to prove anything, but that was what they said about him, and that was what he said about himself. Yeah.
Yeah. But he had the stamp.
Yes, he had the stamp. So the Avudram has this very interesting record of what happened when Rav Shrira Gaon passed away. Remember, Rav Hai is Gaon already while Rav Shrira is alive, but it really becomes his once Rav Shrira is gone. So take a look at source number three from the Avudraham. Remember, the Avudraham is your authority for all things related to Tefillah. And he's a Rishon. So look at this, which he records from Rav Sadia, Gaon. Kasav Rabbeinu Sadia. Shabbos Sheyiya Bo Hesped Lochacham. On a Shabbos when they eulogize a Chacham, Maftirin Parshas Gala Kavod Mi Yisrael. So we read the Haftarah from the fourth parak of Sefer Shmuel. Fourth parak of Sefer Shmuel records the loss of the Aron to the Plishtim in war, and the death of Eli when he hears the news, and the death of Chafni and Pinchas, and so on, and the naming of Ikavod, right? Ikavod, the origin of the name Ichabod. Like all weird-sounding English names, it has its root in the Torah. So Ikavod is the son of Pinchas, and his mother dies giving birth to him, and she says, she's naming him Ikavod, Gala Kavod Mi Yisrael. Honor has been lost from Israel. So Rav Sadia said, on a Shabbos on which they eulogize a Chacham, they actually read that as the Haftorah. Remember, the Haftorah historically was much more flexible than it is today. The idea that I have a book and the book tells me what to read was not always in place. There was a little bit of flexibility, and certainly for special occasions. Up until I think recent history, among Ashkenazim, on the Shabbos of an Aufruf, you always read Sos Asis. That was your Haftorah. You didn't have whatever was in the Haftorah book. I don't know exactly why that stopped. I would think it made life a lot easier for Chasanim, you know, if they just knew, like, okay, this is what I have to do. Nonetheless, Umatzasi Kasu B'tshuva She'ela L'Harav Shmuel B'Rav Gershon. But the Avodram then says, I found recorded in the answer of a She'ela for Rav Shmuel B'Rav Gershon B'zeh L'Shono. Uma Shehugod L'cha Ki K'Shenifter HaRambam Zal. You were told that when the Rambam passed away, She'nichnesu HaKal L'Beis HaKnesses V'Karu Brachos U'Klolos, that they went to Shul and they lain the Tochacha, V'Hiftiru B'Navi Moshe Avdi Meis, and they used as the Haftorah the death of Moshe from the beginning of Sefer Yoshua. Kain Shamanu Gam Kain. I've heard that as well. So wrote Rav Shmuel B'Rav Gershon about when the Rambam died. And then he says, this is now the Avodram talking again, Gam Abba Mori Zalkasav Bahalachos Bilchos Avel Sheshama Kikishanifter Rabbeinu Shrira Avel Shrabbeinu Hai Karu Ba'oso Shabbos B'Parshas Yivkod Hashem Elokei Ruchos L'chol Basar. They leaned that Shabbos, Parshas Pinchas, the request of Moshe for Hashem to appoint a proper new leader as his successor, correct? Even though we've just said that he dies on Pesach, so this is not the Kriya that's supposed to be. Nonetheless, that's what they lean.
Maybe.
V'heftiru v'ayikrivu yimei David lamus, and the Haftarah was when David was dying and he gave his last instructions. Uvimak uvimkom pasuk uShlomo yasham v'kisei David, and instead of the pasuk that says Shlomo sat on David's throne, karu v'hay yashav al kisei shvira aviv v'tikon malchuso meod. They altered the pasuk. I don't know if this was like after they read the regular pasuk or what. Zev looks horrified. That's not what he said, though. That's not what he said. He said, in place of the pasuk. Yeah, I mean, part of that has to do with the impact of Rav Shrira. It isn't all about Rav Hai. It's about the impact of Rav Shrira Gaon, who we've said restored the yeshiva in Pumbedisa to its status. In Rav Shrira's time, it had really deteriorated, and he restored it. Rav Hai continues those steps of restoring the influence of the yeshiva. This is from Rav Shmuel Mirsky's account. Rav Hai solicited questions. We usually think of the Gaonim as people who just everybody writes to. But Rav Hai actually writes letters to the communities saying, join my WhatsApp group. Send me questions so that I will be able to answer the questions. Communities far and wide, as far as Germany, they're sending him questions. And he answers the questions. The answers that we have are in Hebrew, they are in Aramaic, they are in Arabic. He's answering in multiple languages for people. He licenses communities to identify themselves as acting under his guidance. Like they can say, our Piskei Halacha are approved by Rav Hai Gaon. He held Yarchei Kala for advanced Talmidim, right? You remember in the time of the Gemara, they had Yarchei Kala. They had these periods when the farmers would take off and they would come to learn at the yeshiva. So he did that for advanced Talmidim. And then he also had regular shiur for beginners. He had a daily Gemara shiur. I don't believe it was Daf Yomi, given that you didn't have Dapim the way we have Dapim, you know, in his day. But he had a daily Gemara shiur. He had a special Shabbos shiur in Halacha that was for the public. This was his way to expand the Torah of the yeshiva to the Jewish world. He had Talmidim who came from across Europe, from Asia, from North Africa, and thousands of people sent shilos to Rav Hai, including Shmuel HaNagid, who is then the leader in Spain, and Rabbeinu Meshulam ben Clonimus, who is important in Italy and then Germany, the Clonimus family. We'll have to talk about when we're done with the Gaonim. He was important for his analysis of Halacha. He was very sharp. He was very clear in his responses. And people wrote to him already while Rav Shri was alive. He was involved in writing some of the responsa, which caused me some confusion, because sometimes you see a source which is listed as Rav Shrira, and then elsewhere you see it listed as Rav Hai, including some of the best known sources of the Torah of Rav Hai Gaon sometimes appear as under Rav Shrira's name, and they could be during that overlap period when Rav Hai is writing some of the materials or helping with some of the materials of his father. So, according to Rav Shmuel Mirsky's account, there was a Sicilian rabbi Don't mess with him. There was a Sicilian rabbi who wrote to Shmuel HaNagid to learn about the ways of Rav Hai Gaon, because Shmuel HaNagid was known as the Talmud of Rav Hai. So he wrote to Shmuel HaNagid wanting to learn about Rav Hai's ways. We have fragments of the response, including some very interesting notes regarding Avas Eretz Yisrael. On Rosh Hashanah night, during the Simanim, you know, when we all do the different things that we do at the Seder, so he ate honey and something called in there Afina. I do not know what Afina is. I haven't been able to find out. Aleph Pei Yud Nun Hei. But he would say that he would eat that, and he would say Eretz Zavas Chalav Udvash as he ate it to teach love of Eretz Yisrael. Not that the honey was from Eretz Yisrael necessarily, or this Afina, but the honey Zavas Chalav Udvash. So he would say that. There's also this very strange story which I brought you in source number 4, and I you know, it's a long source, but I wrote out the translation because you have to see this. Rabbi Mirsky, when he does this history, brings it, and he thinks it might be a legend. It might not be like something that actually happened, but it's found in the Otzer HaGaonim on Maseches Sukkah. Look at this story. Rav Hai v'Rav Aviyasar Kohen Tzedek Hayu b'Yerushalayim Uba lifneihem rotzeach. Rav Hai and Rav Aviyasar Kohen Tzedek, who I don't know anything about, were in Yerushalayim, and somebody who had killed someone came before them. He wanted to know what to do. V'tziva Rav Hai v'Rav Aviyasar l'hakoso malkos b'har hazesim ad shefech dam alav. So Rav Hai and Rav Aviyasar said he should undergo lashes on Har HaZesim until he's bleeding. V'rotzech tza'ak, hakuni, the murderer cried out, he said, hit me, al tachmolu, do not have mercy, k'dei shalo avo b'din lefnei HaKadosh Baruch Hu, because this is supposed to help him avoid judgment before Hashem. V'rav Hai, and now we move ahead in the story, and we're told, V'rav Hai haya ola b'chol shana l'Yerushalayim mi-Bavel. Every year, Rav Hai would go to Yerushalayim, v'haya Hashem b'chag ha-Sukkos, aliyah l'regel, he would go on Sukkos, k'hayu makifin es har ha-Zeisim b'hoshana rabba zayin pa'amim, v'omrim bizmorim shasider l'ahem Rav Hai. They would walk around Har HaZesim 7 times on Hoshana Rabbah. We do it around the Bima. Yeah. The saying Mizmorim that Rav Hai arranged for them. V'lifnei Rav Hai holchim kohanim melubashim sirikon u'me'ilim v'ach Rav Ha'am. In front of him, he would have kohanim, and they are wearing sirikon, which I believe is some kind of a red garment. I didn't translate it here, sirikon, but in general, samach resh kuf is red. The or Sikra is actually red. Maybe I'm wrong about that. Srikon may not be the same thing. But they were wearing various tunics, and behind him walked the nation. Vahu besoch, and he was in the middle between the Kohanim and the nation. Virachok me ela shalafan of kuf amma vachemi shal acharav, 100 amos ahead of him, 100 amos behind him as space. He is right there in the middle. Vahaya Rav Hai shochek, or sochek. The sochek, not shochek. He was sochek. He was laughing. He felt really good about this. La'achar ha-se'uda. So this happened. And after they ate, ra ha-rotzeach ba'al ha-tshuva es Rav Hai shalibo sameach. The murderer saw that Rav Hai was in a good mood. Amar lo ha-rotzeach, Rebbe, lama ha-yisa ha-lech levad k'she-yisa makifim es Har HaZesim. He says, why were you walking alone in this parade around Har HaZesim? Va'amar lo Rav Hai, and Rav Hai said to him, Nei shani ola b'chol shana mi-bava la'kifas harazesim b'sukkas, v'ani mitaris atzmi. He says, every year I do this, and I purify myself first. V'hoshana rabba Eliyo holech imi, on Hoshana rabba Eliyo anavi walks with me. V'lachein nirchakin me'asher lefaninu me'asher la'achareinu, and that's why there's a distance between me and the people ahead of me and the people behind me. U'medaber imi, and Eliyo talks to me. So that doesn't explain yet why he's so happy. V'sha'alti lo, I asked him, Masai yavo Mashiach, when is Mashiach coming? V'yomar li, and he said, K'shiakifu harazesim and makohanim, when they go around harazesim with the kohanim, that's when Mashiach is coming. V'lakachti kol hakohanim shematzasi lahakif, so I brought as many kohanim as I could find. Ulai beineim kach yiyya kohen kosher, maybe among them there will be a good kohen, who is worthy of bringing Eliyahu. V'amar Eliyahu, and Eliyahu said, Re'ei kol ha'kohanim sh'atarah melubashim me'ilim v'hochem me'geyus. You see all these kohanim who are wearing these fine tunics and they're walking so arrogantly? Ein shum echad mizera Aaron. You asked the question about who is descended from David HaMelech. None of these kohanim are actually kohanim. Oops. Rak echad shu holech achar kulam shenivzeh lahem v'hunim as be'inehem v'holech v'begodim ra'im v'eino chafetz b'chavod u'meisim es atzmo k'mi she'eino. Only this one of them who is mocked and degraded among them. He's got bad clothing. He doesn't want any honor. He acts like he's a nothing. V'hu chiger baraglo achas, and he is lame in one leg. U'mitzad echad chaser eye, and he's missing an eye. That's the one. Amar Zek Kohen Emes Mizera Aharon. That is the Kohen from Aharon's descendants. Amar Rav Hai. Rav Hai said, Chayai Mizet Sochakti. He said, that's why I was laughing. Shebechulam Loya Kohen, Ela Oso Balmum. I thought that was really funny. Okay. Apparently Mashiach didn't show up.
A Geonish sense of humor.
Yes. So, I leave it to you to ask, you know, Rimursky's question about whether this story happened, it's a remarkable story. So, Rav Hai serves in Pumbedisa until he passes away on, as we said, the seventh day of Pesach. Now, in the account that we saw, the account from the first one, from the Ravid, he said that he passes away at Samach Tes Shana, when he's 69 years old. However, the tradition that we have is that he actually is 99 years old. I don't know if that's a typo in there or if that's a dissenting view. Yeah, the general assumption is that he was 99, not 69. Shmuel Hanagid writes elegies upon the passing of Rav Haigon. Rav Shlomo Ibn Gibirol, the classic poet, writes poems about Rav Hai when he passes away. And he has this incredible legacy, which we're going to talk more about. But his students include Rabbeinu Hanano, Rabbeinu Gershom, Rav Yaakov Ben Nisim of Kerwan, who was the one who sent Rav Shri Ragon the letter that became Igeres Rav Shri Ragon. They're all Talmidim of Rav Haigon, and we'll talk more about that in a bit, but if you're familiar with those names, you already understand this is somebody with a very broad impact in the Jewish world. These are three figures from three different places.
Do you know the origin of his name?
The name Hai?
Yeah.
Not that I know of.
Is it
Hey Aleph Yud. Right, so you see it, right, so you see them sometimes recorded as Hey Yud Yud. You do see that sometimes. But you also see it very frequently as Hey Aleph Yud. What do you mean?
In terms of its translation.
It means this.
Yeah.
I named him this one.
Unless it was a nickname.
I do not know. I don't know. Which one? The Rav Yaakov Ben Nisim of Kerwan? No, it's Rav Nisim Gaon is the one from Kerwan, yes.
Right, so
yeah.
That's
yeah, yeah.
So why is he named Gaon if Rav Hai is the last one?
So chronologically, Rav Nisim is actually older than Rav Hai, but also keep in mind that that when he said this is the last of the Gaonim, it doesn't necessarily mean he's literally the last of the Gaonim, just that he's the last dominant Gaon. There were definitely people, as I mentioned, like Shmuel Ben Ali is an extreme example, who call themselves Gaon after him. And keep in mind also that Kerwan is a different yeshiva. You know, they could have been going even as Pumbedisa deteriorated. A little unlikely, but possible. So it's true that the Sefer HaKabbalah, as we just read, thinks that yes, he is the last. Calls him at any rate the last of the Gaonim. If you take a look at source number 5, another piece from the Sefer HaKabbalah, he says Bnei Yeshivas Rav Hai. There's another version of the spelling. You now have Hey Aleph Yud Yud. So the Talmidim in his yeshiva, Hekimu Chizkia Rosh Golos Ben Beno Shal David Ben Zakkai. They established Chizkia as the exilarch. He's the grandson of David Ben Zakkai, who we knew. We knew David Ben Zakkai as the exilarch in the time of Rav Sajagon. Voshivu Al Kisei Rav Haizal. They put him on the seat of Rav Hai. The Nerag Hanagid. The Nagid was killed. The Ubarach ha'echad b'nei Chizkiyo le'eretz Saragossa. One of Chizkiyo's sons flees to Saracusta, which is Saragossa. V'achrav lo nishar b'eretz Sfarad adam mefursam shehumi beis David. And after him, no one remained in Spain to be from the Davidic line. V'achar Chizkiyo rosh yeshiva v'rosh galus pasku yeshivos v'ga'onim. And after Chizkiyo, the yeshivos and the gaonim ceased. That's the account of it in the Sefer HaKabbalah.
What year is this?
This was after Revi, so this would have been the middle of the 11th century. The historian Jacob Mann does say explicitly that, based on the Geniza documents, gaonim continue, but they're not as powerful. If you take a look at source number 6, he does not like the history of the Ravid on this. He says, the Babylonian Gaoni did not come to an end with the demise of Haigon, as is the prevalent theory in our history books. This erroneous assumption is all due to Avram ibn Daud, several of whose incorrect data concerning the so-called Gaonic period have long been taken for granted, only finally to be discarded in recent times by the new light which the Geniza finds have shed on the obscurities of this period. In other words, he says, the history, when you compare it with the documents that we have, doesn't stand up in certain ways, including when the Gaonim ended. Among those discarded notions, he's a little harsh, the view of the end of the Gaonate soon after 1038 is to be singled out here. The Gaonate continued to wield great influence on the Jewries of the Orient, extending to Syria and to Egypt, and it is therefore, when he says Orient, he means the Sephardim, he isn't thinking Japan, and it is therefore entirely erroneous to speak of the end of the so-called Gaonic period with the death of Hai. As regards the Orient, it continued down to the end of the 13th century. Only in Spain and in other European countries, the rise of centers of learning was bound to result in a diminution of the influence of the Babylonian academies. He makes the very important point that the Ravid, who's writing this, is living in Spain. And in Spain, remember that Shmuel HaNagid was a Talmud of Rav Hai. And so it could be that there, as he notes, Spain is rising, and the power of the Gaonate declines. It's also worth noting that the blurring of eras in history here is logical, because we've said already a little bit, and we're going to see more when we talk about the end of the Gaonic period, that it's not as though there's an abrupt end to the period of the Gaonim. They've been fading for a while, and Rav Shrira succeeded in bolstering it, and Rav Hai succeeds in bolstering it. But it's been petering out. It's not simply, okay, we've stopped having Gaonim, heads of yeshivos, the yeshiva's closing its doors, you know, Volozhin is done, and that's it. It's closed. It doesn't work that way. So there's no reason for it to be as abrupt as Rav Hai passes away and they don't make Gaonim anymore.
Was there a major historical thing that happened at the end of Gaonim's life and they have changed the trajectory?
Not that I know of. When we talk about the end of the Gaonic period, we'll see there are events that are happening. The fall of the caliphate, which is before his time, is one of them. I think it was before his time. We'll see. But it's not as though there's a particular event that we look at. It's not, you know, Holocaust ends an era, expulsion from Spain ends an era type of thing. You know, the Crusades, for example, are a long way off when he passes away. So, his role in our Mesorah, thousands of tshuvos to the whole Jewish world on every topic.
That we have.
On every topic in Judaism. Not only halacha, but we'll see matters of machshava as well. Tanakh, he's got it all. Way more than any other gaon in terms of his surviving literature. And not only because he's later and therefore fewer are lost, but because he really wrote that much. He did have, as we already noted, some chiburim, some compositions. We have some of his commentaries on the Gemara. Small sifrei halacha on different areas of halacha. He had something on shechita, he had on tefillin, he had on loans, he had on dayanim, on judges in Beis Din. He wrote on Hebrew grammar, he wrote poetry, because it seems like everybody in those days wrote poetry. He's quoted by everybody in every arena. And here I come back to his Talmidim and his sphere of influence. Because Rabbeinu Gershom is a Talmid of his, through Rabbeinu Gershom you end up with Rashi, you end up with Tosfos, you end up with the German Rishonim, you end up with the Rush, you end up with the Tur, right? All of them, that whole line
comes from
Rav Haigon, because Rav Haigon is the Rebbe of Rabbeinu Gershom. Rabbeinu Gershom, in his own right, is extremely prolific, and we'll talk about that. But it's not like it's all just from Rav Hai. But not only that, but the Spanish we shown him as well, because the Ramban learned from Balei HaTosfos. So therefore, you influence Ramban, and through him, the entire Spanish school that comes from Ramban. And then, Rabbeinu Chananel is Rebbe of the Rif, who is Rebbe of the Rambam. So he also is an influence on the Rambam. Everybody is beholden, in some sense, to Rav Haigon. When you talk about Mefarshim on the Gemara, that means everybody from Rabbi Nassim Bal Ha'aruch in Italy, who I believe learns under Rabbeinu Chananel, Rashi, Tosfos, the Mordechai, the Bal Amar, Ramban, Rashba, Ritva, Shita Mekubetzes, all of them are going to be stemming from the yeshiva of Rav Haigon. The Rambam is quoted as describing Rav Hai as the last of the Gaonim by Ira and the first of the Gaonim by significance. That's his line. Rav Hai gets quoted in Tanakh. The Radak has a long discussion in Sefer Shmuel, the story of the Ov in Endor, right? When Shaul goes looking for advice for what to do, the Plishtim are attacking, and he goes to this odd necromancer of some kind to call up Shmuel. So all the Mefarshim on Tanakh want to know, what does that mean? Does Ov work? Is that like an effective thing that you can summon somebody? Because she seems to summon Shmuel, like for real. So they all have discussions of what exactly happened. And Rav Hai, who is a strong rationalist, is one of the opinions that weighs in on this. And the Radak, you know, later, the Radak is in the 13th century, quotes Rav Hai in the discussion. Ibn Ezra quotes Rav Hai on where is Olam Haba found in the Torah. He quotes Rav Hai's explanations. Like, he's everywhere. And all sorts of miscellaneous things. One thing that I want to come back to as an example of this, it won't be this time, it's going to be next time, but it's very important, is a tshuva that Rav Hai writes to the question of shofar. Right? Did you ever wonder, when we blow shofar, right, you're probably more or less aware of the conflict that leads to the shvarim and the trua, right? We know that the Torah describes blowing shofar in two ways. It describes blowing etkiya utkatem b'chatzotzeros, and it also describes a trua sound. It says there is a trua sound, v'harei osem trua, different ways in which it says you're supposed to have a trua, but it doesn't say, obviously, what either of those are. And the Gemara says that etkiya, we know what it is. Etkiya is a long, straight sound. Trua is supposed to be some kind of a sound of crying, but it could be a shvarim, what we call a shvarim, or it could be what we call a trua. It could either be these long sounds, tu, 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 or it could be the staccato sound that we associate with a trua, tu, 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 tu. And then the Gemara talks about how Rabbi Avahu said, okay, so therefore we're going to do both, right? We're going to do the shvarim, and we're also going to do the trua, and we even do the shvarim trua, blending those together, because these are all modes in which people cry. So somebody sends a letter to Rav Haigon asking him, how did they get confused? You blow shofar every year. Why weren't you just doing what you did the year before? How did they lose track of what that is? Such that Rabbi Avo needs to come along and say, okay, fine, so we're going to do this, and we're going to do this, and we're going to satisfy all the opinions. Why are there all the opinions? Like, what happened? I mean, it happens to be true that we have this happen with things every year, about things in our shul, in every shul.
Yeah, you could say this about everything.
But this is dramatic. This is really dramatic. Like, you have people blowing shofar in every shul, in every community, on an annual basis. Somebody knows what this is. Can you give me a comparable case where there's a machlokes on something that you're literally doing on an annual basis everywhere? Sorry? Right, so there's a lot of discussion about how you end up with Rashi, Rabbeinu Tam Tefillin. They say, right, they. But remember, Rav Hai's before them. No one could have asked Rav Hai about Rashi, Rabbeinu Tam Tefillin.
And I've heard a comment made about the Esrog, that's one of the Masoros we do every year. No discussion. No
right,
contract. Because
we know what an escrow is. Right.
But,
so we're going to see.
The fruit of a beautiful tree.
So we're going to see Rav Hai Gon's answer to this, which is a really remarkable answer. And it explains a lot about Judaism. So that's going to be, God willing, next time. You'll see. It's a really remarkable answer that he gives, published in the Sefer Tmim Deim. But just to conclude with some points here, in terms of his important contributions to learning Shas, to learning Gemara, he asserted that Bavli beats Yerushalmi. Right? That wasn't true during the time of the Amoraim. We have these records of Amoraim who make Aliyah and they fast in order to forget what they learned in Bavel so they can learn in Eretz Yisrael. But from his line of Torah, the Rif, say no, when there's a conflict, Bavli Yerushalmi, we're going to follow the Bavli. He explained many sugyos, many passages of Bavli in his letters. And he insisted, and that's this last source that I brought you in source number 7, he insisted that communities in Europe should continue what was done in yeshivos in Bavel, and therefore they should focus their learning on Gemara, not Machshava, not philosophy. You should be spending your time in the yeshiva learning Gemara. He was concerned primarily about two things. Number one, he was concerned that they would become involved in the philosophy of the Arab society, the Muslim society, which trafficked heavily in philosophy. And he was worried about that influence. But he was also worried about losing the benefit of having an anchor in Gemara and Halacha, which ends up becoming really important. He is anticipating the demise of the Gaonut in Bavel. And they're going to need local authorities who know what they're doing, not just people who sent questions over to Bavel. So make sure that you keep learning. And take a look at source number 7. He says, I couldn't fit the translation on the page, so I just did the Hebrew here. Hayamim hayu yemeitzi michaso shal Amerikas ha-Yudia chadash bisfarad. This is Rabbi Mirsky's work. He says that the period of Rav Hai Gon is the time when Spain is really coming into its own as a center. Amnam tchilaso shal zeh haisa od bimei abayis hasheni va'ola od kodem lachein. But Spain had Jews going back to Second Beis HaMikdash. It's not as though they started in the 11th century. And maybe even before by Shani. Aval rak besof tkufas ha-Gaonim gadal v'nase le-omeid b'rshus atzmo. Only at the end of the period of the Gaonim does it really come into its own as an independent thing. And that, going back to Yair's question, is actually one of the reasons why the Gaonate deteriorates. In other words, it's a chicken and egg question. Is it that Spain comes into its own because the Gaonate is deteriorating? Or is it that's one of the reasons why the Gaonate deteriorates? Because you have your own center and people stop sending their students and sending their questions and they're really growing on their own. Sorry?
And their money,
correct. Umerkazeh ha-Yarishon umerkazeh ha-Gola be-Europa. It's the first of the major centers in the exile in Europe. We'll have to talk about the story of the four captives eventually and that influence on the growth of the other centers. Ad az hayu yishuvei ha-Yehudim bi-Karam ba-Astia uba-Africa. Until then, the major centers are Asia and Africa, I mean North Africa. Prat l'Romi u'l'Yeyavan. Aside from Rome and the Greek islands, she'lechla merkazeh gola lo higiyu. They had not yet become centers of the diaspora. I see the time, and I know that the program at Young Israel is starting. So I'm gonna pause here. Actually, come back to this, God willing, next week. We're going to continue in Rav Hai then, and then after that we'll be off. I'm not going to do it Erev Pesach, but we'll be off at that point until afterwards.